Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. Have you ever had surgery and been told you can't have anything by mouth before the surgery after midnight of the night before the surgery? So you're having surgery tomorrow and you're told to be NPO, nothing per os, nothing by mouth after midnight tonight. Is that really necessary? And what happens if that surgery that was scheduled for 11 o'clock now doesn't happen until 5 o'clock because of delays in the OR? Well, this is a very interesting issue that I'm really pleased that we're talking about today. And here to talk with us about it is a nurse who has done some research on this topic, and that is Dr. Jeanette Crenshaw. She is the assistant clinical professor at the University of Texas at Arlington College of Nursing and a family educator at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas. I might also say that she's also an expert in breastfeeding and childbirthing, so she's a very talented person. So, Jeanette, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's just review the process that most people encounter when they're about to have surgery. What are they told? And why?
Well, I bet your audience answered the question that you just asked by saying, I was told to not have anything to eat or drink after midnight, regardless of the time my surgery was scheduled. Some of your audience may have been told to stop eating at 9 or 10 and stop drinking at midnight.
Wow. And why are they told this?
It is based on a long-held belief that the longer a patient fasts, the more likely that it is their stomach will be empty at the time of surgery. And the reason that health professionals would like little to be in the stomach at the time of surgery is to avoid the patient regurgitating something, vomiting, and that substance going into their lungs, which can be life-threatening.
Aspiration pneumonia is often what it's called, right?
Correct, yes.
So, sounds like a reasonable position. What's wrong with it?
Well, we have known for decades now that there is very little chance that clear liquids ingested up to 2 hours before surgery for healthy patients increases the risk of pulmonary aspiration. And we know that patients are much more comfortable if they can drink clear fluids up to a few hours before surgery. In fact, they may be safer if they drink clear liquids because there was, in many studies, found more liquid and more acidic contents in the stomach of patients who fasted for very long periods than those who drank clear liquids up to a few hours before surgery.
Almost as if you've got this empty stomach, you're hungry, and you're secreting all these gastric juices that have nothing to work on.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
So, all right. So, I got more gastric juices happening. So what? What else might happen?
Well, it is not a minor... Sometimes health professionals think, well, we're just asking patients to be a little hungry and a little thirsty, and their chances of safety are much better if they don't eat or drink. Well, actually, as we just discussed, that's not true. But there's also other things that are associated with not eating or drinking. Patients can be dehydrated. They can have low fluid volume as a result of that. Many of us who go without eating or drinking are likely to feel nauseous or vomit. Those of us who have our caffeine consumers are going to be more likely to get a caffeine headache. But then there can be more serious problems from having fasted for long periods, like decreased immune response after surgery, decreased insulin secretion, longer hospital stays, more muscle wasting. And those last few things are associated with not having carbohydrates before surgery, and you can get carbohydrates in a clear liquid. So So not only do many European societies recommend that patients have their liquids up to a few hours before surgery, but they also recommend that patients have carbohydrates the night before and for sure the morning of surgery, and that would be in the form of a clear liquid, high carbohydrate beverage. And that is to prevent those more serious possible consequences.
You know, before we get into what the guidelines are, let's talk a little bit more about some of the potential harms. Because so for people who are older adults, who are particularly up there in years, I'm not just 65, I might be 70 or 80. So this is particularly difficult for them, isn't it, and dangerous to not have something for 14 hours, let's say, nothing, no food or fluid for 14 hours.
Well, the elderly and the very young are more susceptible to dehydration, so that would be correct.
And people with diabetes, what are they to do? What happens with...
You know, the guidelines that were published in the United States say that, which recommend clear liquids up until 2 hours before surgery and light meals up until 6 hours before surgery, say that... These guidelines may need to be modified for certain patients with complications that may cause gastric contents to not be emptied as quickly. And so there is room within the guidelines for specific patients. What's interesting, though, is in the United Kingdom, five organizations came together. And then they also consulted five nursing organizations, and they also consulted with the UK Society of Anesthesiologists and came up guidelines for the multidisciplinary team. And in their guidelines, they recommend that even patients who are diabetic and obese or have reflux also consume clear liquids unless there's some other complication that their health provider thinks means they should not. So their guidelines are even more liberal than the guidelines that were published in the United States. First in 1998, they were adopted and then revised and published again this year in 2011.
So these guidelines, by the way, my understanding is that it's never been this strict with children, and that's because children are very loud with their crying, when they are hungry, when they are thirsty, and when they're feeling like I have to have something in my body. And so is that the case before these guidelines?
You know, that is really how I first became interested back in 2000 and, or before in the subject of preoperative fasting, because I worked in a children's hospital back then, and children in the children's hospital were not given strict guidelines, and I began looking up how long children should fast from breast milk, how long they should fast from other clear liquids, and that's when I discovered the new guidelines in 1998. Now, if it's because children make more noise than adults do, they complain more, that might be one reason. It also, because of their smaller body mass, they're going to get dehydrated sooner, and pediatric surgeons and pediatric anesthesiologists are very concerned about that. But preoperative fasting guidelines have always been less restrictive for children. The surprise was to find out in 1998 that the guidelines were the same for children and for healthy adults. There was no distinction according to age.
So who did these guidelines? And what
the
are guidelines?
The guidelines? Guidelines are not standards. They're not requirements. They're evidence-based, and they're written after a review of the literature that shows the evidence, and the evidence says that patients are not at greater risk for pulmonary aspiration if they have clear liquids up to a few hours. So these guidelines in the United States that we follow are published by the American Society of Anesthesiologists.
So the anesthesiologists, the ones who administer the anesthesia and who are the ones who are going to have to deal right away with any aspiration, are the ones saying we don't need to be NPO after midnight or have nothing by mouth after
midnight. That is correct.
So, what are these guidelines? What do they say?
An easy way to remember it is to think of 2, 4, 6, 8. Patients should fast for healthy patients of all ages having elective surgeries or procedures should fast for 2 hours from clear liquids, 4 hours from breast milk, 6 hours from a light meal such as tea and toast, and 8 hours from a regular meal. Now, I just want to point out that in the UK, they don't even have the 8. They just have the 2-4-6 rule. So they say 2 hours from clear liquids, 4 hours from breast milk, 6 hours from solids and non-human milk.
And you prefaced or qualified the guideline by saying for healthy patients. So if I'm healthy, what does that mean, I'm healthy? I mean, if regardless of the surgery I'm going for, these guidelines apply to me. If it's elective, it's my choice to have the surgery. I don't have to have it as an emergency surgery or an urgent surgery.
So this applies to elective surgery. It doesn't apply to emergency surgery. And in those cases, you always treat someone as though they have a full stomach. But the term healthy is not clearly defined. Healthy, for instance, I have asthma. And so I would not be defined as a healthy patient if I had elective surgery. But my asthma doesn't mean that the contents of my stomach are going to be delayed in emptying, and therefore I would not have more rigid fasting guidelines. So healthy really has to do with, are there things about that individual patient that mean gastric contents, things in their stomach, might not empty as quickly as the average person? Or is this a person who his airway may be difficult to manage while he's having anesthesia and surgery?
So
it's not just a matter of what we might think of as healthy.
So it's qualified by, is there any reason why the stomach contents might be delayed in emptying from what we would expect usual times to be?
Or is there something about this patient where we think we're going to have trouble managing his airway during anesthesia? Something unique about this patient.
So you also did some research several years ago about looking at the extent to which one hospital was following these guidelines. And tell us about when this was and what you found.
Well, we conducted the first study in 2000 and then published it in 2002 in the American Journal of Nursing. And we wanted to know, my colleague and I, Dr. Elizabeth Winslow, wanted to know if patients were receiving evidence-based guidelines for fasting. What were they being told to do? And were the instructions similar or different than what the American Society of Anesthesiologists recommended? And we found, by far, most patients were told to fast from midnight, regardless of the time of surgery, and that they were not given different instructions for clear liquids versus solids. It was just, don't eat after midnight or don't eat after 10 p.m. And very little was changed, even if the patient was scheduled for surgery at 1 or 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And we also found that patients didn't know whether to take their medications on the morning of surgery, and many of them made a guess about whether they should or shouldn't. And so as a result of our findings, we worked with anesthesiologists, with surgeons and with administrators and all nursing colleagues, and came up with an evidence-based guideline for clear liquids before surgery. And it was adopted by the medical board. And then some years later, in 2004, we went back to look and see what was the effect of having a guideline such as this and at our hospital, and had it made any, and of course we conducted education so people were familiar. We did find an improvement among patients scheduled for afternoon surgery, that many of them were instructed to have a clear liquid breakfast or something to eat in the morning and then fast. So we were pleased about that. And we were also pleased that more patients were told about whether or not to take their medications and which medications to take. on the morning of surgery.
So one could sit back and say, well, but you know, that's probably just that hospital down in Texas. And I have to share with you that when I teach at Hunter College, nursing students, graduate nursing students, they're working, most of them in acute care, not all of them. And when I ask them how many of you at your hospitals tell patients that you must be NPO, nothing by mouth, prior to surgery, after midnight for the day of surgery. And it's rare to have somebody say that they do not follow the outdated rule of NPO after midnight. And when I ask them why, most of them don't know the evidence. And some of them do know the evidence, but just last night I had a couple students tell me that at one hospital, in one service, in one department, a surgical department that does hand and foot surgery, that they follow American Society of Anesthesiology guidelines for not saying NPO after midnight. And there's another department that follow, one floor that follows that. But the other services seem to still stay with nothing by mouth after midnight. Why is it so difficult to change this?
I think there are a number of factors that we could look to. First of all, it's great effort to create change. And NPO after midnight is a widely held belief of good care, even though there's no evidence to support it. Many people still believe that it's better to fast longer. I think that it's... some health professionals think it's difficult to change your instructions for the individual patient, that we're going to tell this patient because his surgery is at 10 a.m. one thing, and we're going to tell this patient because his surgery is at 2 p.m. something else. I think there's the false belief that patients may not understand what they're told and mistakenly consume something that's not a clear liquid. And just so the audience knows, a clear liquid is defined as something you can see through. So I can see through apple juice, but I can't see through orange juice with pulp. I can see through tea without milk, but I can't see through tea if milk is in it. So that's one way to look at what a clear liquid is. I think there's concerns that surgery may be delayed because patients consumed the wrong beverage, or suddenly the spot opens up a few hours earlier and we want to move the patient to that earlier slot, and we can't because he consumed something. The good news is that clear fluids leave the stomach almost immediately, and no longer than an hour and a half. And so in three studies that looked at the effect of liberalized preoperative fasting policies, there were no cancellations or delays.
So there's also, and very quickly because we're almost out of time, there's also some evidence that you mentioned earlier that loading up with carbohydrates ahead of time actually might be beneficial. So I can't see through a Coca-Cola, but is that okay to drink?
I wouldn't consider, yes, Coca-Cola is okay to drink, and so is a black cup of coffee, yes. But that's not the same as carbohydrate loading. Carbohydrate loading, the idea is that beverage that you consumed is so rich in carbohydrates that it replaces breakfast. In other words, you are not going into surgery as though you've been fasting. And the goal is to cause a change in metabolism that's similar to when someone eats breakfast. So it turns off the fasting state, or when we fast, our metabolism slows down. And what that does is make us more resistant to insulin when we have surgery. And surgery already increases the risk of insulin resistance, and it can lead to complications during and after surgery and longer hospital stays. So that's why these European societies, and there are eight of them, that are recommending not only unlimited clear liquids, but a carbohydrate-rich liquid that is prescribed be given 2 to 3 hours before surgery, and sometimes another one the night before, so that patients aren't fasting.
Let me just point out that a lot of what Dr. Jeanette Crenshaw is discussing today with us is written about in an article she authored in the October 2011 issue of the American Journal of Nursing called Preoperative Fasting, Will the Evidence Ever Be Put into Practice? I actually tell my friends and family members, Jeanette, that when they're told MPO after midnight, I tell them, obviously, making sure that they are the, quote, healthy adult for an elective surgery, that they should bring it up with their providers, but that, you know, they can sneak that clear liquid in the morning if they're having an afternoon surgery, and they can, just don't have to say that they've had something, particularly if it's a clear liquid. That's probably bad advice, isn't it?
I'm not going to say that.
Okay, thank you.
It is interesting to me that my 81-year-old mother had surgery on her toe 4 weeks ago and was told not to eat or drink after 10 p.m., and she had surgery at 3 in the afternoon.
My gosh.
And she brought all my research studies. Needless to say, an 81-year-old woman did listen to her doctor and did not eat or drink anyway, even though she knew the evidence.
Well, it's certainly something to think about, and I would hope that people listening to this program would challenge their healthcare providers, the surgeon or whoever's telling you that you have to be nothing by mouth after midnight. Challenge that and maybe bring in the evidence to the office. Again, from the October 2011 issue of the American Journal of Nursing, the article by Dr. Jeanette Crenshaw, who's an assistant clinical professor at the University of Texas at Arlington College of Nursing, a family educator at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, and a fabulous registered nurse. Jeanette, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Health Styles, and Health Styles is brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College. You can follow us on our website at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program and co-director of the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College. Thanks so much for joining us today. We'll be right back.